Okay, everyone, pick up.
After 1.5 days, very fruitful discussions, we have a lot of ideas and proposals put on the table. Now it is time to sum them up and sort them out, especially for someone like me with poor listening comprehension. So please help me with that. First speaker is Peter Draper. Okay,
thank you, John. It's been such a rich conversation that it is difficult to think of just 3 or 4 takeaways and be brief. But I wrote down 4 points this morning that occurred to me. And that was largely before our very rich conversation on GBCs and the region. So that I'm still digesting, I must admit, but hopefully by the time we come to others, more will be put on the table. So my first takeaway is actually, it's not a reflection on the discussion per se, but rather what, for me, it was, were 2 interesting absences from the conversation. In other words, issues that we didn't discuss. Of course, there's so much that we could have discussed. We had to make choices. But still, I thought 2 very interesting absences. The first was that we really didn't discuss agriculture in any meaningful way. I know Dick was wanting to raise this, but it did occur to me that that was a gap. And certainly in some of the other round tables, particularly in Brazil, but also South Africa, and for different reasons, I think, in Dhaka, agriculture, food security, these were key issues that were a part of the conversation. And I think that reflects different preoccupations in China, perhaps more broadly in the region, and obviously for different reasons. So in the South African and Brazilian case, we have offensive interests in agriculture, and we want to see the agricultural issue being resolved. But certainly my impression is that China is much more defensive on agriculture, given your large peasant farm base. So that was interesting for me, and it does strike me that it's very difficult to think of reforming the WTO in the absence of reforming agriculture. Having said that, I take Bernard's point that it's very difficult to do so. So the political economy of doing it is extremely important. The second absence for me, but maybe it's just too early to have discussed this, was the fact that we didn't really talk about the G20. So China is hosting the G20 next year. In informal conversations I had, trade is clearly going to be on the agenda. It's going to be a key priority. But what is China going to put on the table in relation to trade? Given that discussions on trade in the G20 context have been almost entirely unsatisfying, beyond a ritual endorsement of we must conclude the Doha round, and an attempt to get the conversation on GBCs going, really the G20, I would argue, doesn't have a trade agenda. And it strikes me that there's a unique opportunity for China, as the single most important trading nation, to really put this issue on the table in a meaningful way. And more importantly, to think about what the G20 can do in relation to restoring multilateral trade cooperation. Maybe another question could be, can the G20 do anything to restore multilateral trade cooperation? So that struck me as 2 interesting absences, but that's in no way detracts from the very rich conversations that we had on a range of other topics. The second key takeaway for me personally was the discussions on TISA yesterday, which is a subject that we really haven't broached before. Oh, I think I'm being delivered a cup of coffee. Fantastic. Thank you, Mary. Much obliged. So the discussions on TISA, Trade and Services Agreement, which, we've had a lot of conversations about plurilaterals. We even discussed the idea of a plurilateral in agriculture in Johannesburg. There was a lot of conversation about that with no real conclusion. So to discuss TISA for me was personally very interesting, to see the dynamics around that. But I was left asking myself a question, and this relates to Bernard's presentation particularly. As I understood, the essence of Bernard's presentation was, where's the meat in the TISA process? There's not much on the table. So why is China so keen to join TISA if there's not much on the table? So I'm still grappling with that question. If anybody has an answer, I'd be interested to hear it. The third set of issues, I won't go into this in any detail, for me personally, me again, was to get insight into China's emerging trade strategy. The idea of moving from a rules taker to a rules maker, which I happen to read Henry's very interesting paper on, but no doubt. And linked to that, we sort of skirted around this issue, the shifting power dynamics in the world, but in the multilateral trading system in particular. And clearly China is at the center of that. But we also heard from Ambassador Sun yesterday that domestic coordination in China for trade policy is, I don't know if weak is the right term, but perhaps more could be done in terms of domestic trade policy coordination. So that if China is going to step up to the plate and take on global trade leadership, assuming that's what China wants to do, to move from being a rules taker to a rules maker, it needs to up its game domestically on a number of levels, coordination, etc. And then finally, the implications for the WTO. I think we really started to touch on that this morning and to get into some concrete areas. And I won't offer anything concrete on that. I think a lot was put on the table that I still have to reflect on. One clear issue is how to treat special and preferential treatment. I raised that this morning. The trade facilitation agreement is a possible model. Having broken the mold of traditional approaches to special and differential treatment, and it does seem to me that if you're going to get plurilaterals off the ground in a sustained way as the future of the way the WTO will operate, you do have to address this question of how will SME be implemented. So I'll leave it there.
Okay, thank you, Peter. Yeah, I'm sorry, I also haven't invited some agricultural experts from China.
So it's not a criticism.
I mean, probably because the Ministry of Agriculture ranks even lower than Moscow.
It's all your fault.
Yeah, but,
that's pretty unique, actually.
Yeah, in China. we have, of course, we have Mr. Hoda from India, which have a lot of agriculture interest. So, please.
Thank you, Chairman. Well, I was wanting to concentrate on the subjects that we have discussed, not those which we have not discussed. Because takeaways could be only from what has been discussed. Well, since we all met to discuss the need for restoring multilateral trade cooperation, my understanding was that everyone is convinced that such cooperation is in the good of the international community, and that multilateralism, which is both the starting point and the end point for such cooperation, is something that should be strengthened, and everyone has an interest in that. So it should not be that the present preoccupation of some of the major developed countries and some other countries with regional agreements, mega-regionals, and of other countries with regional trade agreements, it's taken to mean that one has to forsake the multilateral, rules-based multilateral trading system, and that all of us here felt that this is something that needs strengthening. Mr. Rahman from Bangladesh was the only participant here who came out very strongly for strengthening the rules-based multilateral trading system explicitly. He said that explicitly. But I think implicit in the statements of all others was an agreement that this is something that should be done. Another point that was made, which I take as take away from this, related to this, is that this strengthening of the multilateral trading system is something that after the World War was done by the United States in collaboration with the European Union when it came into being. But since then, we have evolved into a multipolar world on the economic dimension. And it is no longer enough to depend on the major developed countries, including the United States, to take the leadership and take the rest of the international community ahead on strengthening the multilateral trading system. They have to coordinate with the wider community of nations to solve the problems of the system and to take new initiatives to take world economy forward. And for this, they have to coordinate with China and India and Brazil, rather than trying to make their own rules and then imposing it on the rest. So this is the first set of points. Support for the multilateral trading system. The feeling that if this has to be taken forward, then bearing in mind multipolarity, the initiative has to be a coordinated one between the major developed and major developing countries. Of course, participation has to be by everyone. The other point, the other subject that is related to this is RTAs and mega regions, which has emerged as a big issue and which is considered to be weakening the multilateral trading system. Now, it is clearly realized by everyone that even if regionals do not take care of the interests of the countries other than those which are parties to the regional agreements, similarly, the mega regional agreements would go against the interest, economic interests of those who are not invited to join it or who are not joining it on their own. We heard a very clear sort of exposition to show that this was going to hurt many other developing countries. Now, many other non-participating countries. Now, I think it is clearly realized that we cannot stop the mega regionals or regional agreements by any action that we take multilaterally. But there can be some responses to limit the adverse fallout for the non-participants in the mega-regional agreement and in the regional. There are three that were referred to yesterday as well as today. Yesterday, while making the presentation on tariffs, I mentioned that a strong dose of multilateral trade liberalization, tariff liberalization, would erode the preferential advantage and therefore would repair to some extent the interests, the adverse effects for other countries of these mega RTAs as well as RTAs. So this is the first. Second, it was pointed out that it is not the market access area alone which is going to affect the interests of the developed countries, of the non-participating countries through trade diversion. But the effect of the stronger rules in the mega-regionals in particular will be to cause investment diversion. And as a response to that, it was suggested that we should reinvigorate the rules of WTO so that the rules that have been adopted in the mega regionals or are going to be adopted in the mega regionals are multilateralized by adopting them to the extent possible. And one suggestion was that if the member countries of RTAs and mega regional are able to adopt certain strong rules within those agreements, and we also heard about not only bilateral investment treaties being actively negotiated by China, but we know that they are being negotiated very widely by other countries. So in view of that, perhaps investment is an area that we could look at again in the multilateral context, even though we had a very, very sort of a strong skirmish in the early part of the Doha round on that aspect. But the world has changed, and therefore we could perhaps. So I'm just mentioning, giving one example of multilateralization of the stronger rules that are being put in the RTAs and mega regionals. But there are others as well. We didn't discuss enough about what these should be, but certainly competition policy should be another one. And willy-nilly we come back to the four Singapore issues, one of which we have already gone forward with. In fact, two of them we have already gone forward with. Other two are left. And trying to look at them again should be something that would strengthen the position of those who might be hurt either by trade diversion or by investment diversion of the mega regions and regional regions. The third point is about the tariff area, NAMA, which was a special subject for discussion during the discussion yesterday. I think I certainly have that takeaway that many of the problems in that area, in the NAMA area, have been solved and the only blockage was that the developed countries, particularly the United States, wanted the major developing countries to join in the initiatives for sectoral tariff elimination. Considering the importance of concluding the Doha round, it was suggested that the developing countries, the major developing countries, would look favorably at proposals for joining two or three sectoral initiatives proposed by the major developed countries. But it was also felt that to enable them to do so, instead of zero for zero, consideration could or should be given to zero for, say, 5%. The talk in Geneva present on this tariff exercise, market access in general, is of recalibration and bringing down the ambition level and of concentrating on what is doable. In view of the fact that we have to meet with the situation of full liberalization within the RTAs and mega regional, it was suggested that if recalibration has to be done, it should be on the scope of the negotiation rather than on the level of ambition of the tariff reduction exercise. Now, I have just one more point that is regarding the global value chain. Actually, it is connected, I think, one of the speakers, I think it was Deborah, who said that her intervention was to break the subjects of mega regionals and global value chains. I think that's a very appropriate exercise because you do both by taking up some sort of a liberalization of the trade and investment regime. It was suggested in this context, it was more in the context of mega regionals, that countries have moved into the mega regional because supply chains require deep integration. And deep integration is something that was not available in the WTO because 160 countries in various levels of development sort of they could not envisage and they could not support any efforts at deep integration. Therefore, to support global value chains, which have emerged as a big phenomenon in the last 50 years, what needs to be done is again, it is the same thing as what needs to be done to meet the challenge of the mega region, and that is liberalized investment rules, and generally the most important thing is which was pointed out by Bernard, and which is there in his paper also, is that it is important that the countries which participate in the negotiating exercise for liberalization, they bear in mind what is going to affect the development of the growth of the global value chain, and do not sort of take a silo approach, but have a coordinated approach of all aspects, services, as well as investment, as well as the goods barriers, and so ensure that the global value chain let flourish. I think logistics is one of the most important factors that facility in logistics, one of the most important factors leading to the development of global value chain. And therefore, we in this we have concentrated. We have already sort of in adopting the trade facilitation agreement, we have taken care of the process side of logistics, but the countries have also to take care of the harder infrastructure side of the logistics area, that is, improve their ports, improve their transport infrastructure, so that the flow of goods for GVC is facilitated. I just stop there with our discussion by about 15 minutes. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Kora. Vera.
Very, very rapidly. Just to, if you are supposed to give just some hints for the discussion, I think the one important point is that one that for me it became clear that the difference of the megas and the value chain. I don't think that we have problems with value chains inside the WTO. We can involve this issue in the normal work of the more in the WTO than we can do with megas, right? Remember that the proposal of bringing this to the WTO to settlement, I can imagine many countries reacting against it because of the contamination that you bring ideas and a proposal of the mega into the WTO if it is not the thing they want to do. But I don't think this kind of reaction with value change. So my direct proposal would be to think how to involve this in different committees, and I don't know how to do it, but perhaps in the review, the mechanism, something like that, to start bringing examples. As Bernard said, you need to have a kind of a coordinator of it in the country, and perhaps to have a place to discuss this, a forum to discuss this inside the WTO. To discuss what? A direct proposals. Okay, try to trade facilitation on one. How about tariff or energy dumping, or if you have this kind of discussion inside the house, you are going to see naturally how the countries will become to react to those instruments. So I don't see such a antagonist behind the issue of value chain inside the house, then I see mega. Right.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Cynthia. Well, I agree with other panelists'
that this has been a comprehensive one day and a half, and many things have been discussed. Of course, quite something I'm missing, but I touch upon from time to time. For me, I think that I have three takeaways, not necessarily reflecting only what has been discussed, but also some of my own reflection upon the discussion. So it could be my own observation of the discussion. I think the first one is about centering around restoring multilateral cooperation. I think the key issue now is about how do we deal with the post-Bali and the DDA, and how do we look beyond that. I think many things have been said, and I think one central message is that we need to conclude implement the post-Bali, and then conclude Doha by the end of the year, and then look beyond about the future of WTO and how do we not only carry on some of the things we cannot deal with by the end of the year, conclude by the end of the year, but also to open doors for some of the new and challenging issues that are still outside of the WTO, such as investment, competition, so on and so forth. So I think that's one of the key messages. And of course, as Ambassador has said, that the threat is that if we cannot do this, do it this year, and we won't do it for, at least for Doha itself, and that would seriously undermine the negotiation pillar of the WTO. So that's number one takeaway. The second thing is about the problem that has been impeding the progress of the DDA, and also most probably for future discussions about any subject within the WTO, is the role of the emerging economies, including China. It's true that the world has changed and the emerging economies are rising to different extent, but generally speaking, it's all on the rise and catch up with the developed countries. The thing is that how do we look at such emergence, and how do we adjust to this new situation and see whether the emerging economies will be encouraged to take more obligations while vis-a-vis the developed countries they could also gain. So it's a balance issue between the two. And on that point, I think that it has been said that at least some of the things under discussion within the negotiation, and also in other areas, such as a special and differential treatment, how do we treat that in a more innovative manner? I think some of the proposals have been said that whether we could shift from the stereotyped obligations waiver into a grace period, and so on and so forth. And of course we have an extensive debate on how do we tackle this label of the DDA, the development round, and centered around not only emerging economies, especially on differential treatment, a lot of LDC concerns, and how do we look at those LDC concerns in a more kind of more practical and also innovative manner, be it on duty free quota 3, be it on rules of origin, a quota, and others, and the capacity enhancement. So I think that this is actually setting the takeaway, I think, will be key, not only for the existing negotiation, but also, most probably, for future negotiations. And then thirdly is that world trade is not a solo. It's not only on DDA. It's not only on WTO negotiation. As we have seen from these days' negotiations, many other things are there, such as the mega regionals, such as the various plurilaterals, including GISA, and of course, and also the new challenges vis-a-vis the global value chains. And I think that my sense is that WTO is not up to the level to face those kind of new challenges, and to to face up to the implications such as by the media regionals, to face up to the kind of challenges by those plurilaterals, such as on the decision-making mechanism, consensus. And I do see that one proposal by, I think, Kuo is that we need a kind of relaxation of consensus agreement, at least for plurilaterals, to be incorporated in that tool. And how do we see that those new issues, such as labor rights, standards, and other things we have been extensively negotiating and with rules being made already there, not harmonized, of course, in various FTAs, and how do we bring them under the umbrella of the WTO? That brings us to what Vera has, and also I think others have asked about, how do we use the kind of existing WTO mechanisms, be it a regular committee meeting, council meeting, be it a kind of new working group, and Werner mentioned about the empowerment of the secretariat to use more resources, and also for plurilaterals, how do we provide more transparency to the non-participants, and how could we get engaged secretariat, not leaving them totally in the darkness. So I think all those things points to the weakness of the WTO system. If we cannot adapt it itself to this, I think they will be further being driven away from the central arena of the world trade. These three takeaways, for me, I think it is centered around one point. The thing in China will always say that when you criticize someone so loudly, it means that you love him so deeply. So our criticism vis-à-vis the WTO, its shortcomings, its weakness, is because we are fully devoted to the system. And I think it's not said, but it's widely shared that WTO still matters a lot to us. And the only reason is because, to use Werner's word, is because I was one of them, yes, we negotiated through that. And that's the reason. But from how you see that Ambassador Sun, when his emotions could so easily be stirred by some new information he has heard about the lack of enthusiasm from the business world and about the various kind of participants, behavior in the negotiations, and you could see how almost 6 years away from Geneva, he's still kind of so attached to the system, like us. So I mean that this is something I think one of the main messages. Having said this, I have a kind of humble, probably recommendation, because I think from the first day, this is my first time to be among you, but the first day I heard from Peter and others is that and this is actually the last round of the meeting of this program project. For me, it's a pity, because I think that's so many things. Even this 1.5 day has kind of shown me that how important, no matter what the issues we are discussing, but the way we are discussing, the kind of various kind of recommendations on various.
You
can subjects.
Write a report. This would be welcome.
No, that's actually I thought probably. I mean, this project the team could do so. Is that maybe not make it too long, because anything more than 3 pages won't be read by the ambassadors in Geneva. So just maybe a shorter summary, taking out the thrust of the discussion. But not more than that, I think Werner said that the first day, that some of the recommendations that has emerged from our discussion on various issues, that I think for me could be very much relevant to the ongoing discussion, not only on DDA, but also on the future, post-DDA WTO. So I think if this could be done and passed to Geneva, to the secretariat, to the ambassadors, and to other think tanks, I think it will be very much helpful. And that's also good, probably, to think about next step of this project. And the final word, probably, if you, Xinchuan, if you allow me just 2 minutes more to answer the question by Peter about why China wants to be in TISA. Yeah. When Werner said that TISA is nothing. No, the thing for China, as I said, I'm only saying this from the general sense as a kind of formal WTO China official in charge of WTO. The thing is that when Werner said that TISA is nothing because it's a locking of commitments, it doesn't create new additional market access.
These are two different things, huh?
Yeah, those are two different things. But for China, the thing is that at least I cannot say, I could say in generally speaking, but as well as in some specific sectors, the low bar, as Bernard said, the low bar by visa is still something that China has not reached there yet. So for us, that's a kind of external force that China could use to push for liberalization of not only specific sectors, but to give a kind of driving force for the whole kind of Chinese reform process. The next one, those hardcore issues. I think that's something. And also, not only market access, looking at the domestic regulation, there are many, many things that which are, you have all said that, which are more important than market access. Domestic regulation on those, and China still have a lot to do. I think that's the where I think behind why China wants to join that. With that, I'll conclude. Thanks.
Okay, thank you all for your concluding remarks, which might not be conclusive.
Your turn to give the conclusion.
You can take away anything here in this room, but we have already kept a lot of insights and ideas to us, which I really appreciate. We have learned a lot from all of you. As a host of China stop of your global trip, global round, I'm very happy to have you here with us. I hope you all enjoy the today's discussions and stay in Beijing. I look forward to seeing you again on our campus. Thank you.
Let me thank you, because the all your effort and the help of the girls and boys around. Thank you very much. We really appreciate your work in that. Thank you.
Indeed. Indeed.
Sure, I think just to echo Vera's thanks, it's been a very interesting day and a half, or slightly more than a day and a half. Very rich, as I've said. We've covered a lot of topics and certainly got a lot of takeaways or takeouts, as Ms. Holler said to me last time. Just in terms of process, we have developed quite a meaty paper, which is a kind of a synthesis of various discussions that we covered, just to key takeaways, I suppose, but in some detail, not short like we've done now. So that will certainly be put out fairly soon. As you're aware, we've also got an international advisory group, some members of which are here with us. We're going to meet now, just to remind you as well, to discuss the next and final steps in the project. So one of the ideas on the table is that we produce a short 3-page executive summary with some key recommendations, suggestions. I mean, we don't agree on everything. That's also one of the key challenges, what we put into that short summary. And the intention will be to take a short summary, but also the longer report, and then present it in key capitals. Now, since we've already been in key developing countries, we're targeting more, we think, that we need to discuss this. Geneva, in the first instance, so we certainly want to go and talk to the ambassadors and other interested groups in Geneva. We want to go to Brussels, capital of the European Union, in a sense, and put these ideas on the table, so hear our perspectives from developing countries. We may go to London, we're not sure about that yet, but that's a possibility. And then, of course, to Washington.
Yeah. COVID's home there.
Oh, yes.
Where? In Washington or London?
London.
To pay us for the next tranche.
So, if we are contemplating a next phase of this project, we need to find someone to fund it. So, Dillard is in London, they have lots of money, they're looking to spend it. So that's one reason to go to London.
Well, if the TPP is done really this year, this would be a good occasion to to continue the project. Now we have it. Now and now, what will be the consequences? Right?
Yeah. Okay, so we'll discuss all of that a bit later. But then Washington is definitely on our radar screen as well, and of course the Cordell Hull Institute will host us there, and we'll probably do a couple of other presentations as well, such as at the World Bank, maybe one of their seminar series, for instance. We haven't decided, so this is what we're doing.
We may come back to Beijing again for the you know, with the AIAB. It's in the soft infrastructure.
Yeah. So that's just to give you a sense of where we're thinking of going. We still need to take these decisions. But I'd certainly like to thank Xinchuan and his team very much for hosting us. We've been very hospitable. Food has been fantastic. The company excellent. The conversation very stimulating. So from all of us, thank you very much. And of course to our international guests who come from various places, thanks very much for participating. Thank you.
Can I thank Saya also, not only the international university?
No.
The UIB.
And Saya, please. Memory.
Maybe we should share with all participants before we go to the advisory meeting about where we are going tonight for the logistics.
Tonight?
Yeah.
Are we going somewhere tonight?
You thought you were going home, huh?
Okay. No, I will go with them. Not everybody.
Okay.
All right, we'll discuss that.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
Okay. Well done.
Okay. Yeah. Right. So then you can go back to the hotel.
We're going to meet here or not?
Thank you very much. Very, very useful. Thank you.
Yes.
Nice to meet you again. No, I hope so.
Okay.
Wait for a minute in the car. The ferry bus will be one minute. No problem. Deborah, I think I'm go ahead. I'm going to write an article. Make a circle, you talk about the organization, and then
I have no idea. The worst gate, actually.
Same. Nothing. All the stations.